Okay, great. So thank you for coming back. I'm going to go back to reading the CVs. Kath Mulcair is with us. Kath is the CFO of Defence Health and has worked in regulatory affairs with KPMG on the Accounting Professional and Ethical Standard Board and represented CPA Australia on the inaugural ASX Corporate Governance Standard while working as Director of Public Policy, Financial Reporting and Governance. Prior to her CFO role at Defence Health, Kath was Chief Financial and Operations Officer at Melbourne Storm Rugby League Club, where she was responsible for rebuilding trust and restoring confidence after the salary cap scandal in 2010. Okay, so please join me. And it's great to have someone here who's not an actuary and not a regulator, another perspective, and hopefully that'll lead us into some great discussion in the panel. So thanks, Kat.
And to answer your question, yes, I often get questions on that, but we might leave those ones till after the after panel. How's that? It won't surprise you to know, though, I'm all up for a sporting analogy throughout, but I'll let you guys choose the code when I get to that. I am going to use this because I am at greatest risk of going over time because I love talking about regulation, which I realise is probably a sad indictment of my personality, but it's fun, right? It's the stuff that actually creates opportunity. It creates the greatest risk. It's the most exciting part of managing my part of Defence Health. In the past, as Jamie suggested, my role with regulation was more about going in after the event and actually fixing problems. But that has actually given me a fair amount of insight into what it is that we should be thinking about when dealing with regulation. I also find it extraordinary the number of times I have worked across a number of industries in this role. And every industry I work in tells me we would have to be the most regulated industry. And I always go, oh, no, it's unbelievable the rules you guys have got to follow. I find myself in this industry with having come in actually because I decided on the quiet life, having done a lot of regulatory interventions prior to that, only to find that it has been fairly calm in terms of regulatory change since 2007, until about 2 years ago, which happened to coincide with when I joined this industry. So now I'm starting to think it's just me. So we'll see how we go when it comes to the industry perspective, because I suggest that probably what you'll end up with is probably far more of Kath's perspective of what the industry perspective is. And I should warn you, I have only been in this industry for 2 years, so I'm not going to ever profess to be an expert on private health insurance. I also have to be particularly careful because I'm talking to a group of actuaries who know far more about this, but I've also got Barry up the back and he'll go if I'm getting it wrong. All good. So I want to talk about three perspectives. The first industry's perspective, and this is the same with any industry, when it comes to executives, boards, you really have to think about what it is that keeps the industry up at night. What's on the radar? Now, why do we think about this stuff? Why do we have to always be mindful about what it is that's coming? We've got to identify the issues, right, including competing objectives. We have to do that in a way to understand the actions and consequences of what's coming. We then got to manage the risk and we've got to deliver. Now, that doesn't matter what your role is. It doesn't matter whether you're the actuary, the CFO, you're on the board. You have to understand all of the things that are coming. You can't overthink it. You can't lose sleep over it. But you do have to understand, I now need to manage this to the best outcome of my organisation. I will remind you of the trio, the triangle, the wonderful scenario where actuaries come in and really manage those expectations when it comes to what it is that the board's thinking about and what it is that the regulator's thinking about. Fundamentally, what it comes down to is how industry participants respond. This is predominantly determined, in my view, particularly when it comes to regulation. It's determined through the lens of the risk appetite as determined by the board. You guys are crucial to actually understanding and determining that risk appetite. All of the things that we have seen in the previous presentations around worst-case scenarios, stress testing, FCRs, all of that is about how much risk are we currently taking. But it's also about how much risk are we prepared to take in order to meet these challenges, in order to meet what's on the radar as it comes to us. So I like to look at things not just through the risk appetite in terms of, ooh, there's a risk, we should avoid that risk. But there's a risk. How are we going to manage it to the greatest outcome and benefit for this organisation that I am working for? The second important industry's perspective. What keeps the regulators up at night? And what's on their radar? Now, I like to understand what it is the regulators are thinking. I do often use, in this industry, our actuary and our CEO and the industry bodies to get that understanding. Occasionally I have a direct conversation as well, which also helps me, because I get a better understanding and a better feel for what it is the regulator's worried about. Why do I worry about where the regulator's coming from? Because I want to be able to address their concerns before they become issues. Before too much thought goes into it and too much over analysis and too much not enough of what I'm thinking, and all of a sudden we think we've got an issue. Deal with those issues before they become breaches. So I don't want to think about something and say, well, I'm not going to worry about this, I'm not going to pick up the phone, I'm not going to have this conversation. And then all of a sudden we're far enough down the path that we've actually got a mistake. Because of what I should have done at dot one is basically worked out what the interpretation is, how are you guys reading this, what are you worried about, so that I can actually avoid a problem with the regulator. Problems happen. Trust me, after 10 years in regulatory affairs, I've seen a lot of them. They do happen. My next thing is, when a problem happens, I know that that is going to keep the regulator up at night as much as it is going to concern me, my board, policyholders, media, you know, all the possibilities. So the best way with any breach, inadvertent, that's my favourite word, we don't have real breaches, we only have inadvertent breaches, accidental, not an issue, let me just talk you through it, is to do that openly and honestly. So I need to understand all the things that the regulator's thinking in order to respond to those things, so that even if we do have an issue or a breach, we can resolve it quickly, efficiently, and without any ongoing trust issues, shall we say. I think that how the regulator responds is also determined through the lens of the risk appetite. But it's determined through their view of risk. And that's perfectly acceptable. They've got all of this information and data about my organisation, and I need to understand what they think the risks are that we're facing. How significant do you see that what I would regard as a minor breach? Do you see that as something that I need to address with the board? Do you see that as something as, you know, is an ongoing thing? Has it actually had an impact on our trusted working relationship? Let me tell you, if you do not respond to any regulator openly and honestly, you will end up with a much higher view of the regulator of what risks your company is prepared to take. So that would be the industry's perspective number two, is understanding what the regulator thinks of your organisation as an organisation, thinks of your risk appetite, how well do they understand it, and are you aligned? The third industry's perspective is specific to my observations coming into the private health insurance industry. This is the industry's current perspective of why we have regulatory change at the moment. Because generally speaking, the view is that if there's nothing wrong, then nothing needs to change. We are a healthy organisation. I think I remember a quote, you know, you'd have to use it, you couldn't kill us with an axe. You know, it's a very strong industry. Good governance practices, we're okay. We don't see the collapses that other industries have seen. We don't see the problems that other industries have seen. We've got really strong capital management. So if everything's good, nothing needs to change. We don't need more regulation. And let me tell you, every industry says that. So that's not unique to PHI. But unlike other industries, we can point to reasons why we don't need more regulation. And therefore, industry's perspective three is that everybody should sleep soundly. If we've got no issues and we've got no change, then what's the problem? The problem is all the things that we've already brought out in the earlier presentations, which is around, but what about best practice? It's not whether or not we're doing okay, it's whether we can do better. What can we learn from other industries, from the experiences of those, before they become a problem? So if you go back to industry perspective one and two, it's about knowing what's coming and responding to that earlier so that what's on the radar doesn't become an issue, so that the issue doesn't become a breach, and so that you're not having a tough conversation with the regulator. So really genuinely looking at this through the lens of, as I said before, the risk appetite. But having that risk assessment done through the perspective not just of you, your organisation, but you, your organisation, what's the industry seeing, and most importantly, how are you viewed by the regulator? I would caution anybody who has a board or an executive who's saying they're wrong without even having a conversation. If you go into your board and you're having a discussion that basically starts off with, look, this is why my assumptions are right, but what I'm hearing from FIAC, as an example, could be ASIC, could be ACCC, could be the Privacy Commission, it doesn't matter who the regulator is. This is why I'm right and they're wrong, then I would suggest you're already coming from the wrong position, because I think one of the movements that we've seen, Sean in his presentation referred to moving from an industry-coordinated regulator to an independent supervisor. Simple prescription to complex risk management. Narrow financial focus to broad good management. Ensuring viability to broader consumer perspectives. And I would add to that, moving from right and wrong, we're right, someone must be wrong, to help me understand. And that is the one thing that I have probably enjoyed more so elsewhere, because I had to get my understanding up very, very quickly, was the ability to sit down with the regulator, sit down with the actuaries and the staff at FIAC and say, help me understand, because I can tell you what I'm hearing from my actuary. I can tell you what I'm hearing from our appointed actuary. I have no issue with that. What I'm not understanding is why we have a difference. So can you help me understand where you're coming from? And I have not had any issue with gaining that understanding, with people taking a meeting. The issue with right and wrong, well, I don't need to tell you the issue with right and wrong. If you really want to get a really good example of the difference between right and wrong in terms of legality versus right and wrong, should we have actually managed our business this way, then there's a whole plethora of information out there at the moment as known as Essendon. Okay, so you want to know the difference between tell me where it says I can't, to tell me whether this is actually good for our club and our people, there would be an example staring you right in the face. Analogy number one. Some would argue Melbourne Storm analogy number two, but we'll have that discussion afterwards. The interesting part is it's a little bit like marriage and divorce. People don't realise how little effort it would have taken to work at the marriage until they find out how much effort it takes to work at the divorce. Regulation is much the same. It is a lot easier to comply, to have those open and honest discussions with your regulator, than it is to manage the problem once it's a breach and you're in the courts or you're in the discussion going forward about how to fix it. So that would be my advice. Manage it early, work at the relationship, and everyone will benefit from it. I actually went through the Institute of Actuaries process on this and did a peer review, because I really felt that if I was actually talking from the industry's perspective, I should speak to some of the other CFOs about it. And it's funny because the question was asked, should we just follow the way that APRA's gone with risk management standards, capital standards, stress tests, you know? Here's one that we've prepared already. And the question that was asked was, what's unique about PHI industry? The one thing I would say is, what's not? I mean, we've got insurance. that just does my head in, just quite honestly, because it's not risk-based. If you smoke, if you live an unhealthy life, you get pretty much the same thing at a low price as somebody who takes really good care of themselves, doesn't just buy a gym membership, but actually goes to the gym, right? You know, they actually get to pay for the unhealthy people. This is an unusual thing for me. So I came into this industry not really understanding what community rating was about. So, yes, there are things that are unique. The question that Sean answered earlier, what's unique about the Australian environment? We have a private health insurance regulator. Unique. But it is a very unique environment, and I think it deserves that. Quite frankly, it wouldn't matter whether it was part of another organisation on the grounds that they'd have to have a unique area within it to set it up anyway. We'd probably just find ourselves funding life insurance companies as well as private health insurance. So I'm more than happy. So the big question is the alignment. Oh, I'm going the wrong way. The big question is the alignment. Fundamentally, where regulation goes wrong, in my view, and again in any industry, is when the business activities don't align to the rules being written. Because then you actually end up with some really bad outcomes. So if we're not having those open discussions about this is how it would change my business decision, but we do think that the business operating model right now is right, then a rule that changes that business approach, how can that rule be right? So having those sorts of discussions to make sure, and that's where I think actuaries play a critical role, is in that alignment process. That's where the conversations that you're having with board and executive, I'm telling you, if you change this price to this, this is the outcome. If you increase benefits by this much, this is what it's going to do to your gross margin. This is what's going to happen to your capital. What concerns me is when I hear things like, what happens if we change the rebate and we now have to somehow link that to CPI? And I would warn you, don't link it to CPI. CPI has very little to do with our business models. But I'm going to come back to that one. And can I ask you to ask that question when we're on the panel? Because I really want to come back to the real crux of what happens if there's not alignment between the rule and it changes business practice to nil effect. I did say I was going to give my Cath's perspective, CFO's perspective. When regulation and business don't align, you end up with perverse outcomes. So if I use the example of the draft capital management standards, as currently drafted, there might be improvements still coming. And I look at the way that term deposits might be handled from a liquidity perspective. This is one where I would see and have heard, not just from my board and my investment committee, what does that mean for our investment policy? And my response was, I thought we were very, very confident that our investment policy was right for the business that we're in and the way in which we manage cash flow. I've seen, I'm responsible for our cash flow projections and everything. I am absolutely confident that even in a stress scenario, in worst case scenario, we're good to go with the way in which we manage our cash. What I would be saying, and have said, because I've been invited to open consultation on this, what I would be saying is, if a change in a rule caused me to go back to the investment committee and say, you need to change the investment policy, then that would actually question my business practices, not the application of the standard. And I like having that opportunity to have that robust discussion with a lot of assistance from the actuary and a hell of a lot of assistance from our investment advisor. So that would be the first one that I've seen since I've been here that I went, this is not the right outcome for our business. The rebate indexation I do want to come back to. But what does concern me about rebate indexation is I keep hearing things from this industry about what it's going to do to the way in which they're designing their products. I hear about, therefore, we are going to have to reduce price at the expense of benefits. We're going to have to introduce more exclusionary products. We're going to have risk-based products, in inverted commas, because we would never have a risk-based product. Or I hear words like, well, you know, but some of the customers are looking for MLS minimisation strategies. And I go, that scares me, because that's regulation driving business. And I never think that's a good thing. And why don't I think it's a good thing? Because let me tell you what happens. People start playing around the edges. And this is one where it would not make a difference which code you wanted to talk about, right? So just for the benefit of variety, I'll use soccer. But if you want a different one, anyone want a different code? Can do the same thing, doesn't matter which code it is. Soccer's good? Okay. So if I look at soccer, what is the one thing that we all know about soccer? It is a great game. What is the one thing you don't like about the game? When skills are replaced by acting. So this was an important part of the game. It was used to turn the game around. Somebody went down. Then, you know, they had to stop the game. The irony was that then they changed the rules and said, well, we don't have to stop the game unless it's a head injury, which is why, extraordinarily enough, you see when someone does their knee, they grab their head. Right? You know, I don't know how long it took them to learn that, but it's kind of like they went back to 2-year-old. I got a sore foot. And they go down because the referee is entitled, the umpire is entitled to stop it for that. Now, they introduced a new rule around deliberate diving for a penalty. So all of a sudden, granted, makes it harder for the refs. Why? Because they needed to get a better outcome for the game. They needed to get a better outcome for the spectator. Now, fundamentally, what I find is when business and regulation don't align, people start gaming. So what happens when they start gaming? Well, then you change the rules. Fundamentally, what you want to do is you want to make sure that whether it's your board, your regulator, executive, you want to make sure that you're clear about what the objectives are you're trying to achieve. In their case, a better game for the spectator, for the TV, a better outcome, people not gaming. So they change the rules. And that, oh, by the way, my last one I don't need to say because you all know about complexity. Kath's perspective. This is just me. This is not from the industry. If you want to pay less tax, earn less money. That would be the safest way to do it. If you want less regulation, stop doing the wrong thing. And that doesn't matter what industry it is. We've got to get this regulation right around the capital management standard, about our response to indexation, around MLS, risk equalisation. Oh, get me started on risk equalisation. Community rating, exclusionary products. You guys have all seen it within the companies you work for or the companies that you're advising. There's just that, you know, that you can see them all of a sudden saying, well, you know, don't throw yourself on the ground unless there has been contact, because that could actually cause us more risk. All of those things, you can hear it. That is not going to lead to less regulation. That's actually going to lead to more regulation. So that would be my final view on it. But they did say, if nothing else, Kath, because you'll start talking about all sorts of other stuff like sport and, you know, your previous experience with regulation, bring it back at least in the last slide to what does it mean for the actuaries. This was actually in one of the information pieces that I was given ahead of this presentation. Actuaries have played an increasingly significant role in private health insurance in recent years, particularly since the advent of a formal role for appointed actuaries. The upcoming new capital standards, review of appointed actuary standards, further new horizons for actuaries and require some adaptation. That's what we're exploring you to do. I would argue the question that I was asked, how can actuaries best position themselves to take advantage of the new opportunities? And my answer to that is be actively involved in alignment. Preferably not mischief, preferably not gaming, preferably not moving the company, the people that you work for, to what's going to best be the outcome under the regulation, but getting the alignment between what it is that we're all trying to achieve, prudential responsibility, policyholder protection in our case, consumer protection, depending upon your language, and competition. Fundamentally, we're talking about we have to stay competitive. Otherwise, that's not sustainable either. But not at the expense of long-term sustainability of the business. And getting that balance right is fundamental. That's the alignment that we're looking for, and that's where I think actuaries can help all businesses in private health insurance. And the upside, there's always a regulatory cost. But in this particular instance, the regulatory cost is, for us, the cost of advice, which to you is the dollars.